It had been raining for a couple of days, and I just happened to look out the window, and I said, there's water, brown water rushing in.
This is Deanna Wolf. On the morning of September 27th, she was in her mobile home, a house that she loved, when Helene hit Damascus. She was on the phone with a friend from church.
And she said, well, where's it coming from? And I said, well, it's coming from up the other end of the park. And I said, it's really coming fast. And she said, grab what you can. We'll be right there.
Meanwhile, up the mountain in a nearby community called Taylor's Valley, Linda and Carl McMurray ran upstairs as floodwaters swept into the first floor of their home.
And Carl looked over at me and he said, we're floating. And our whole house was moving.
And then their house split in two. Linda was tossed into her sewing room while Carl fell into the raging water below.
I went under the water, and next time I thought I was going to drown before I got up to the surface and got some air. And I guess that cold water kept me from passing out. From there, I swam as hard as I could and still almost didn't make it.
More than 70 people in Virginia were rescued from the floodwaters during Hurricane Helene. Severe flooding, mudslides, and tornadoes killed at least 250 people across seven states. Helene was the deadliest hurricane to hit the mainland of the United States since Katrina, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The devastation in North Carolina and Tennessee was the most deadly, but residents in Southwest Virginia were affected too. This is their story. I'm Roxy Todd. This is Mountain Hurricane. Helene, 1 year later, a documentary by Radio IQ.
Helene, Helene, why did you come that day?
All the people we spoke to, residents, local leaders, and weather experts, said something like this. While flooding does happen here, a storm of this scale is unusual in the Appalachian Mountains.
I think it's unprecedented for our generation. Hi, my name is Rusty Hamm. I'm the chief at Marion Fire EMS in Marion, Virginia. We were all taken by surprise because we, even with strong storms, we don't see storms that have quite that impact.
Mary Gale lives in Damascus.
Oh my gosh, no. I mean, hurricanes, we don't have hurricanes in the mountains. Like, we don't have tornadoes in the mountains, but we do now. Yeah, we do now. And, you know, I think we're going to be seeing more erratic weather.
Why did this storm unleash so much water? What lessons could we learn about preparing for future flooding in the mountains? That's what we set out to better understand. But first, let's return to Linda and Carl McMurray in Taylor's Valley.
You know, we had never talked about being in a survival situation like that.
Linda was born in this house, as was her mother. Linda's grandfather built it in the late 1800s, back when the railroad was running timber down this mountain. That railroad was converted into a biking trail called the Virginia Creeper Trail. Thousands of tourists rode it each year. Many stopped and talked with Linda and Carl, and the trail has become a part of their home in way too. But Helene washed it away and destroyed 18 bridges from the Creeper Trail. Some of those old trestles actually flowed downstream, plowing into the bridge right in front of the McMurray's home. It created a kind of dam and pushed the water into their living room.
I don't know if I was in shock. And now I kind of have trouble really remembering how I felt right, you know, when the house split.
Their neighbors recall hearing a large crash as the McMurray house broke from the force of the water. The couple, who have been married 58 years, were tossed apart. Linda wasn't sure if Carl was alive.
Because I thought for sure when I saw him hit the water, there was no way he could have survived the swift water that he did.
Linda stayed inside her sewing room as the house continued moving down the river.
And my sewing machine was sitting there. There were quilt blocks I'd been working on. All my craft books were in the shelves. There were fabric. If I'd have had electricity and lights, I could have sewed all night. I started singing. I sang hymns, every hymn I could think about. And especially, Great is Thy Faithfulness and How Great Thou Art. I started praying, and I just kept repeating the Lord's Prayer, and I kept repeating the 23rd Psalm. Lo, I'm with you. I'll always be with you.
Carl was alive. When he first hit the water, a piece of wood and then an ATV hit him in the face. He nearly lost consciousness, but he was able to swim. Luckily, he was wearing a life jacket. After he was able to get into a tree for safety, he managed to catch his breath and take in the surroundings.
A pretty day, got calm, except the rush of the water, and it's kind of like big streams out in Yellowstone on both sides. So, yeah, it was something else.
He climbed onto a redbud tree, where he stayed for hours, yelling and waving. Eventually, he heard a helicopter. It was a special crew from the National Guard, searching for survivors. Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin had declared a state of emergency ahead of the storm reaching Virginia. Emergency rescuers, Swiftwater crews, and the National Guard were already in place when the waters began rising. A rescuer on the helicopter grabbed Carl and pulled him up.
I said, "My wife's down there," and they got in position, and then we just wore it out, just back and forth, hunting and looking.
Eventually, the pilot said they couldn't keep looking for Linda.
He said, "It's getting towards dark. We're low on fuel. We've got to go." So it was a long ride to the airport.
Linda spent the entire night in her sewing room. The water and debris had damaged the bridge in Taylor's Valley, leaving the community cut off from rescuers. Around 8 the next morning, neighbors managed to get to Linda. She sat in a rocking chair as they carried her over the broken bridge.
So I kept saying, "Carl, Carl, Carl," and my neighbor said, "Carl's okay. He's in the hospital." And, you know, that was the best news ever, to know that he was okay.
Meanwhile, about 35 miles away in Marion, an 11-year-old boy was swept into the floodwaters. He was pulled into several culverts and traveled 1,000 feet downstream. Fire Chief Rusty Hamm says multiple rescue teams jumped in to help.
Firefighter EMT Brett Miller and my Deputy Chief Richard Kiesling actually tied off on a rope, went in, and pulled the child from the swollen waters with the assistance of some officers from Marion Police Department who were on the other end of the rope, making sure they didn't get swept away.
The boy wasn't breathing and didn't have a pulse. A medical doctor with the EMT department started mouth-to-mouth and CPR.
And within what felt like an eternity, but I'm sure it was just a couple of minutes, I was able to feel the child's pulse in his wrist, and it was just bounding. His pulse was bounding. And that's entirely due to efforts from the team that was there with him.
Nearly a year after the rescue, Hamm says the boy is doing well.
We've since been able to break bread and have pizza with the young man, and it's truly a remarkable story.
Two people were killed by debris from the high winds. One was a teacher in Craig County. The other was a man in Tazewell. Nobody in Virginia died in the floodwaters, though Damascus town manager Chris Bell says the rescues would have been far more difficult in the dark.
We were fortunate not to have any serious injuries and no deaths, but that might have been different if the storm had hit at 1 a.m. in the morning.
The high water flooded the entire downtown of Damascus, and most of the residents were rescued from their homes and told to get to higher ground. Bell says as the rain kept falling, he knew they were in a dangerous situation. They were literally cut off without a solid plan for evacuating residents to another location if the water continued rising.
The water, you know, which is normally a creek, becomes this raging river. And the only high ground is up on our medical center. And can we fit everybody up there? It's that realization that, you know, Mother Nature is a beast.
The water gauge recorded that Laurel Creek in Damascus rose 12.5 feet in 45 minutes. But the water didn't get as high as Bell feared. Down in North Carolina and Tennessee, way more water fell, and the scale of the disaster overwhelmed rescue teams. That's the kind of situation residents and community leaders are thinking about now as they struggle to rebuild.
It's been a good wake-up call, and I think we're putting things in place now to be a little bit more proactive going forward.
Later, we'll hear more about what Damascus is doing to protect residents against future natural disasters. First, I want to tell you more about what life was like right after Helene swept through Appalachia. On Saturday, September 28th, thousands of people who had evacuated their homes woke up to face what the storm had taken. 83-year-old Elizabeth King had lived most of her life along the New River in Wythe County. At first, she resisted leaving, in part because her husband is buried next to her house in a waterproof casket. But as water began pouring into her home, her daughters persuaded her to evacuate. She moved in with her daughter, Kathy.
Everything gone.
What'd I tell you? That's just memories. Our main concern was you.
I know.
When her daughters returned to assess the damage, they discovered that their father's grave hadn't been touched by the flood.
We promised our daddy on his dying bed we'd take care of her, and that's what we intend to do. Isn't it?
Yes. That was his biggest fear.
Her being took care of.
Them two were like two peas in a pod.
Though her daughters were more than willing to keep her with them, she was determined to go back to her own home. But rebuilding was not and never is immediate, and it would be 11 months until she could move back home. For others, it was impossible to go back. In Damascus, a friend took Deanna Wolf to look at what was left at the mobile home park where she'd been living for 14 years. Her home was the only one still standing, but the land beneath it had washed away, and most of her belongings were destroyed.
My picture albums were all on the bottom shelf. When I walked in there, some of my little stuffed animals and things like that were all laying in the floor in the mud.
She says she didn't just lose her home, but also her community. She had close-knit neighbors that felt like family.
I never dreamed anything, you know, like that would ever happen. And it just completely destroyed the park. All the houses that were in there were swept down. They were all wrapped around the trees down on the other end where all the trees were. And everything was washed away.
It wasn't clear how long it would take for federal funding to become available.
People say, well, what are you going to do? I said, I have no idea.
Damascus town leadership and volunteers began holding meetings. All the buildings in downtown Damascus had been damaged in the flood, so they hosted meetings in the town park. This section of town had actually flooded during a previous flood in 1977, but because of mitigation work the town and the Army Corps of Engineers did to repair the stream bank, the park was untouched by Helene. Damascus town manager Chris Bell recalls that at one of those first town meetings, a group of organizers from White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, came to share their experience of helping each other after their community was flooded in 2016.
And literally passed out a little spreadsheet of a how-to guide of what exactly they did. And that was very powerful. It was in the middle of a town park, you know, we had only had power for a day or two. And several local residents kind of took that to heart and said, hey, we can do that.
Inspired by what worked in West Virginia, residents in Damascus created a nonprofit called Trails to Recovery. Local faith groups joined with the Mennonite Disaster Service and began raising money to help survivors repair and rebuild their homes. They raised nearly $1.7 million in private donations and rebuilt 91 homes in Washington County, including one for Linda and Carl McMurray, the couple in Taylor's Valley who were separated during the flood.
These houses are rated for a Category 4 hurricane, and it's a solid, just all you need. It doesn't have a lot of frills, but it's a good house. And they built it in 3 months.
The McMurrays received assistance from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, but this funding doesn't cover all the costs, points out Damascus town manager Chris Bell.
And a nonprofit can work outside those restrictions and really move in an expeditious manner.
So the newly formed nonprofit, Trails to Recovery, was able to cover the gaps and move quickly. Volunteers did all the labor, says Carl McMurray.
Help came from everywhere. It didn't matter whether what school you went to, what political party, or what church. Everybody pitched in and helped. And that just shows you the goodness in the country, even though we dwell on a lot of the negatives.
One of the volunteers was 73-year-old Mary Gale in Damascus. Like many, she spent months mucking out buildings and rebuilding homes.
The Lord blessed me with being small enough and agile enough that I could get underneath the houses and pull out all the old insulation and the ductwork and the sticks and everything. And I wore my mud well.
She and a neighbor began helping the morning after the flood.
And then he said, we've got to feed everybody tomorrow morning. And so he has a camp stove in his RV. And so we parked at the end of the street and fed breakfast to everybody who walked by the next morning.
In addition to feeding neighbors and cleaning out wet insulation from flooded homes, she also helped drive Amish and Mennonite volunteers when they needed groceries or supplies.
They loved the mountains. They loved hiking. They would take off as soon as they finished their meal, as quickly as they finished their meal. And that was after working all day. I could be in a horrible mood, and I could join them. And within an hour, I was at total peace.
Helene didn't only destroy homes. The entire water system that supplied Damascus needed to be rebuilt. Bridges were washed out. Hundreds of roads in Virginia were damaged or destroyed. The tourism industry also took an enormous hit from Helene. Most of the small businesses in Damascus rely on bike riders from the Virginia Creeper Trail, which was severely damaged in the storm. Many of the business owners here weren't sure if they could reopen. David Phillips works at Adventure Damascus Bicycles, one of several bike rental businesses in town that used to bring tourists to the top of the mountain to ride down into Damascus.
And at the end of the week, Michael, our owner, he called everybody in and laid everybody off. He's like, guys, I think that's it. This is just completely done. 27 years. And we were all rather surprised. I'm even choked up about it.
The damaged section was through the top half of the trail, which is the most popular. On this stretch, you can ride downhill through the National Forest. On the bottom half, between Abington and Damascus, you have to pedal a little harder. That part of the trail did reopen, and Adventure Damascus began shuttling bikers to Abington.
And it was like a glimmer of hope, though we still didn't know what the new normal was going to be like. It's just so many people ride the upper half of the trail.
After the flood, Scott Little and his wife's small shop, Green Cove Collective, closed. They had been set up along the Creeper Trail between the top of White Top Mountain and Damascus.
And we were basically a general supply for all the bicyclists that came down the trail. So coffee, hot chocolate, had a wood-burning stove, people could warm up, get snacks, take a break.
They did some brainstorming and eventually decided to move their business down to Damascus, at least until the Creeper Trail is fully repaired.
We've had to pivot, you know, and shift the way we think about retail here in this location because the customer needs are different, so we have to adjust accordingly. And we also have to adjust our expectations. We go from 250,000 people a year to riding this trail to a fraction of that post-Helene.
They sell different things now, too. More clothing, some vintage camping and hiking gear, since Damascus attracts hikers from the Appalachian Trail, which runs through town. He's hoping businesses here can stay open, but it's been tough.
And it is quiet and sleepy right now, and there are days when some of these shops make $100 and they barely make enough to pay rent. That's going to be what it's going to be for a while, you know, until the trail's back.
Their shop isn't the only new business in Damascus. Angie Wood is co-owner of Bad Bagel's Pet Emporium. She says after Helene, the town's coffee and ice cream shop invited them to share their space. Both businesses help pay expenses and are hoping they can kind of help each other get through this economic slump.
And so it's really fun. We can come in, you can shop for your pet, but you can also grab some amazing desserts, ice creams, coffees that are all made in-house. So we hope that in the next 2 years, when the Creeper Trail is back, like the entire town will come back in full force. But for now, we're having to get creative. This is one example of how, as a town, we're trying to stay alive.
Congress allocated money to rebuild the Creeper Trail, and the Forest Service estimates the project will take hundreds of millions of dollars. It may fully reopen in fall of 2026, but with the extent of the damage, the work could stretch into 2027. Winter is always a slow season for Damascus. After Helene, the winter took on another level of heaviness, says town manager Chris Bell.
Winter is depressing because now all the leaves are gone, and now you're really seeing what the flood did. So you're really just looking at flood damage day in, day out. I remember the first days of spring where things started blossoming, and it kind of hid those scars, which was nice because you weren't constantly reminded of just what happened.
And with spring came new riders to the bottom half of the Creeper Trail. Folks like Kevin Bounds, who traveled from North Carolina with his granddaughters and his grandson Isaac.
We're taking a shuttle up there at 3 o'clock. And then we're going to be riding down back to Damascus.
And they're avid bike riders. They like to go into a park or a greenway somewhere to ride bikes. So this is going to be their first adventure with a 17-mile ride.
It's going to be his first time riding 17 miles on a bike as well.
A few weeks ago, a new fly fishing shop opened in Damascus. The town has started organizing new events this year to promote the area's draw as a trout fishing destination, says Bell.
We stock the streams with trout. Even without stocking the streams, there's just a lot of large trout in the area.
There's still a lot of work ahead, but Bell and others in Damascus say they feel more hopeful now about the town's future. Up next, we'll hear from weather experts on the science of Hurricane Helene and why it brought so much water to the mountains. Are we better prepared next time a storm of this size hits Virginia? We'll explore that question and more after a break. I'm Roxy Todd.